I'm a 17-year-old male from England. When this took place, I was 16, and it was December of last year. Me and my mates live in a small village located about 20 miles south from Manchester. 2 minutes on the train from us was a larger village, which we would frequently visit as we attended school there. And there was also more stuff to do. Our small village didn't really offer much for a bunch of amped-up 16-year-olds. There was this old abandoned office building in the larger village that was about a 5 to 10 minute walk from the village center where all the shops were. The old office building was quite creepy to look at night. Each floor was the same, a huge office space to the right of a staircase leading to the back stairwell. To the left were the toilets and various other side rooms. We would sneak in through a broken window that we would then cover up, so no other people would know that we were in there. Once in the building, the first thing we did was go up on the roof and get a bird's eye view of the village below. One night, me and three of my friends decided to play a game of hide and seek in the old building. The rules were that the seekers had to count on the roof and give the hiders at least 5 minutes before coming down to look for them. After several rounds and changing up teams a couple of times, one friend and I decided that it would be a good plan to hide near the ladder, so when the seekers came down, we would discreetly climb up and hide out on the roof. After successfully making our way up to the roof without being seen, we stayed up there for about a half hour. The two seekers eventually got bored of looking for us and came to the roof, where we jumped out and scared them for a laugh. "How long have you guys been up here?" one of them asked. I kept saying that we had been up there the whole time. He looked at me, confused, but didn't say anything else. I thought nothing of it, so we decided to play one more game before heading out. It was now our turn. We started the timer, and the former seekers descended the ladder. Once 5 minutes passed, we began our search. Once we got to the top of the stairs, I looked through one of the big main offices where you could see the back stairs, and I saw one of the hiders walking down them. I thought that I would be sneaky and go down the main stairs and cut them off. But when I got there, they were gone. 15 minutes later, me and my partner were getting bored and a bit creeped out. We knew that they were somewhere in the building because we kept hearing footsteps, doors closing, and what sounded like things being dropped on the floor. We decided to cheat and FaceTimed one of the hiders. When my friend picked up, we were mortified to see Christmas lights outside the building. They had ditched us, and whatever we were hearing wasn't our friends. We immediately hung up and looked at each other before hauling ass out of there. After meeting back up with the other two, they went on to say that to get back at us for outsmarting them, they thought it would be funny to leave us in the building knowing someone else was definitely in there with us. After calming down because I was utterly pissed at them, we then all talked about what we saw. My friend explained that when they were trying to find us, they both saw someone on the back stairwell and also heard people talking. They began hearing doors opening and closing and what sounded like random things falling to the floor. When they both realized that we were actually on the roof, that's when they decided to leave and play a prank on us. I responded by telling them that I also saw a figure on the back stairs and how we also heard the exact same things that they did. To this day, I still have no idea what was in there with us. We had been in that building several times before and never had that problem. Thinking that for hours on end, we were playing hide and seek, unaware that something or someone was in there with us, makes me feel sick. The building was demolished a month after this happened, and they plan on replacing it with a housing development. This is a photo of the front of the building, taken back in the 90s, when the building was still in operation. So this has to be the strangest thing that I have ever experienced. At the time, it was very unsettling. I'm from the Bristol area in the southwest region of the United Kingdom. Back in July of 2001, I was working my first job at a local department store while studying for my final GCSE exams. I was 16 at the time. I used my pitiful first month's wages to buy my first mobile phone, a Nokia 3210. At first, everything was pretty normal, and I was enjoying the novelty of communicating while on the move and sending short messages, etc. That was until I started getting random missed calls from the future. I would get these bizarre missed calls, either during my shift or just before it started. When I checked the details, I got the same date and time on every occasion. One missed call, no number, December 31st, 2049. New Year's Eve, nearly 50 years into the future, when I would be 66. These calls always came from a quote, no number. It didn't say unknown number, it said no number. That was unusual, even for cell phones in the early 2000s. Most people I tell this story to try to rationalize this by saying, oh, the phone date was just set incorrectly. But I proved this wrong by showing them that the phone was displaying the correct date. I would have chalked this up to a one-off glitch if it had happened only once. But I lost count after this happened at least 13 times over the space of a month. On the 11th time it happened, I caught the call as it was ringing. When I picked up, I heard a bunch of garbled alien-like noises. It was almost like the chirping and whirling of an old dial-up modem, only much more advanced and organic sounding. Unfortunately, it was too fuzzy and distorted to make anything else out. I've tried searching forums, chat rooms, and various other websites for a few years afterward, looking for any kind of rational explanation, but I found nothing. The call stopped around December of 2001, but the creepiest thing was that every time I missed the call, a strange sensation came over me, like I was being watched very closely. No one was ever in close proximity to me when I found out that I had missed a call. I remember trying to take photos of the screen as evidence, but it was somehow never visible in all the pictures I took in any light. Remember, 20 years ago, we didn't have cameras built into phones, and screenshots weren't a thing either. So what do you think? Was it a random error, or was it my future self trying to warn me about something? Could it have been aliens, or was it some kind of temporal communication technology being tested on me? Or perhaps it was just another glitch in the Matrix. All I know is that it felt very wrong at the time, like I had accidentally stumbled upon something I shouldn't have.
I'd like to preface this story by acknowledging that the truthfulness or reliability of asylum or escaped mental patient stories tends to be questionable. The reason why I'm skeptical of those stories is that large-scale closures of asylums began in 1967 through the 1980s and were completely decommissioned by 2015. So I raise my eyebrow whenever someone talks about spooky asylum stories that happened within the last two decades or so. Still, I will be sharing my story as factually as my memory allows, and refrain from exaggerating any aspect. I often visited my grandparents' home in Traverse City in northern Michigan during the summers with my parents. Traverse City is a beautiful place, produces 75% of the world's cherries, and was home to the Traverse City Regional Psychiatric Hospital, which operated from 1885 to 1989. Since the United States federal government officially deemed the hospital worthy of preservation for its historical significance, the buildings on the hospital grounds were guarded by patrolling security guards. The Traverse City Psychiatric Hospital was massive, including 70 or 80 buildings of various sizes. Some buildings have now been converted into restaurants, gift shops, tourism traps, cafes, etc. But many remain empty and abandoned. Underneath the hospital is a sprawling brick tunnel system, which the hospital staff used to safely transport the patients from building to building in the frigid winter temperatures. I'm sure there were instances where the patients underwent cruel treatments or were subjected to the care of horrible doctors. But the Traverse City Psych Hospital had a great reputation. Many teenagers, including myself at the time, were unashamedly fascinated with the hospital and its history. As a result, we would often break into abandoned buildings through unbarred windows or doors with pickable padlocks. While there were a few cases where teens would get caught and charged with breaking and entering, as long as we were stealthy, stuck to our safe entrances, and paid attention to the guards' patrol patterns, we could go in and out without worry. I am not advocating for or trying to justify my criminal act of B&E, but breaking into the old hospital was almost a rite of passage for the Traverse City teens. The hospital's interior was terrifying. There was old, stained, and broken equipment and furniture, crumbling floors and walls, vandalism, strange old building noises, and complete and utter darkness in the tunnels, basements, and lower floors. Using flashlights was too risky with the guards patrolling, so we often navigated the hospital by memory and our dimly lit phone screens. As you can imagine, our frightened, youthful imaginations ran wild with horror stories, which is pretty ironic considering we made up most of those stories. Unfortunately, during my last trip inside, I encountered something that terrified me to the point I swore off ever returning. The story takes place around 10 p.m. The moonlight was dim, and most patrol guards left for the day. Clad in black, my friend Jason and I entered through the same window we always used and followed our regular path to one of the tall, jutting spires to sit by the windows that overlooked the entire city. There was only one thing different about this venture from the others. A new, faint, and unexplainable smoky odor. Not smoky like fire, but something more akin to incense. The smell was so faint, we almost thought we were imagining it, but it grew stronger as we got closer to our destination. Rather than taking the stairs that led up to the spire, we followed the smell down to a different hallway until we reached a room with a deep red glow emanating from the doorway. Rather than doing the smart thing by leaving immediately, we couldn't resist the urge to walk closer and investigate. When we finally reached the room, I audibly gasped and felt Jason grip my wrist so hard, his nails left marks on my skin. We found a large ring of red votive candles and burning incense circling a drawing of a pentagram with a sigil of Baphomet. In the center of the drawing was a dead, bloodied bird surrounded by black feathers. Bear in mind that I was raised devoutly Catholic, so seeing this image filled me with a sense of fear, stronger and more paralyzing than any ghost sighting ever could. Later on that night, Jason told me I immediately started mumbling prayers, but I personally don't remember doing that. I wouldn't be too terribly surprised, though. While the duration felt infinite, I'm not sure how long we stared at the occult scene before hearing a man's low and ominous voice behind us saying, "Welcome, friends." I promise you that there was absolutely nothing friendly about the way that guy greeted us. Jason and I screamed bloody murder, whipped around, and saw two nicely dressed but frazzled-looking adult men smiling at us. The man in front of me held something in his hand, and while I can't say for sure what it was, I remember thinking that it was a knife at the time, which wouldn't be too crazy of a guess, considering they recently sacrificed a bird, or what looked like a real bird. Jason and I sprinted past the two, and I felt someone's fingers grab the back of my shirt. Thankfully, the occultist's hand didn't have a solid hold on me because I ducked and managed to escape his grip. The men shouted for us to stop running, which we obviously didn't. We heard their footsteps chasing after us for a little while. But thankfully, Jason and I had broken into the hospital so many times that running through the unlit rooms, hallways, and tunnels was no challenge. When we finally reached and vaulted through our escape window, the occultists were nowhere to be seen or heard. We kept running through the hospital grounds until we reached Jason's car, with no concern for the patrol guards. We would have rather gotten caught by the guards than the occultists. I puked twice in the parking lot. Whether the cause was fear, sprinting nonstop for a mile and a half, or a combination of both. I'm not sure what would have happened if the occultists caught us, but I know for sure they weren't going to crack open a beer and sing Kumbaya by the candlelight. I'm not familiar with cultic practices or satanic rituals, so I'm not sure what the men were trying to do or if they were summoning something. Jason and I never returned to the hospital during that summer or any of the following summers. While we aren't close now that we're adults, I know that horrifying experience will keep us cemented in each other's memories until we die. This event happened in early 2022. My boyfriend and I had gone out of town for a weekend to attend a Comic-Con about 5 hours away. I was very excited as I was planning on attending my first meet and greet, as well as just being out of town and just exploring a city that we've never been to before. The excitement, however, would soon turn sour. After the 5-hour drive and a bit of exploring, we were dead tired. We thought it best to go and check into our hotel. We had a lot of things to carry in, as we didn't want to leave our purchases in the car to tempt a thief. So we had to take 2 trips from the car to our room. Once we got checked in and was given the room number and key, we started on the journey to find our room. We ended up being assigned to a room at the other side of the building. Walking down the hall to drop the first load of things off in our room, we passed a room very close to ours that smelled horrible. We had looked at each other with disgusted looks on our faces. It nearly smelled like something had died. But we thought nothing more of it until we went into our room, dropped our things off, and came back out to go back outside. Again, this room was fairly close to ours, only about 4 doors down, so we didn't have to go very far before we started to hear screaming. The voice sounded young, like a kid. At first, we thought it was just maybe an unruly kid throwing a fit, but then we began to understand the words being shrieked. Get away from me. Okay, this amped up the worry scale quite a bit. It could still be a kid throwing a fit, right? Then, the blood-curdling scream. The terrible, awful scream that still sends chills through my body to this day. The scream that stopped both of us in our tracks right outside of their door. We looked at each other, terror gripping us. After hearing so many horror stories about trafficking, I automatically thought the worst. At that moment, we didn't quite know what to do. Knock on the door and risk getting hurt? Call the police? Or just alert the front desk? My boyfriend automatically cut down the first idea. There was no way he would put me in danger like that, or let me put myself in that scenario. We had also left our phones in our room. Stupid move, I know. But we were just going to the car and coming right back. So we were stuck with the third option, alerting the front desk. Now, normally I have bad anxiety and can barely talk to strangers, but I went straight to the front desk manager while my boyfriend got the rest of our things from the car. I let her know everything we noticed, everything we heard, and how concerned we were. She asked what room number this was. When I told her the number, she seemed to hesitate. I could tell she was about to say something that was going to further my unease. I was right. She told me that it was the same people that had been staying there for quite a while, almost a month. They claimed it was because their house was being repaired or something to that effect, but there were obviously doubts about this. She also said that no housekeeping had been in there to clean, because they were always in there and had the Do Not Disturb sign up, not wanting anyone to go inside. What's more disturbing is that I was not the only one to come to the hotel staff with complaints and concerns about these patrons. There had been complaints about the smells coming from the room, as well as what other patrons had described as children throwing fits or being unruly. Now she was having second thoughts on these reports. At this point, my boyfriend had re-entered the lobby with the rest of our things and was eager to get back to our room. I went with him, but not before asking the manager what we should do. She could not give me an answer, but promised that she would do a welfare check on the room. I was in no way comforted by this, and when we got back to our respective room, I began to cry with overwhelming dread. That child could just be throwing a tantrum, of course. But what if it was much worse than that? What if the child was actually being hurt, and I wasn't doing anything to help them? My boyfriend saw that this was bothering me and suggested that we go ahead and call the police if it would make me feel better. I was torn. I wanted to, but I didn't know if I had the right to do that, as I was not on my own property. Leave it to me, the resident overthinker, to think of hotel policies at a time like that. As I was debating with myself, we suddenly heard sirens coming down the road, and they seemed to stop right in front of the hotel. We waited for a time, thinking that they had just passed the hotel, before my boyfriend went to the lobby to ask about calling the police. While he was gone, I rang my mom and told her what was going on. I didn't want to be alone, and I knew that she would calm me down. After a few minutes of talking with her, my boyfriend came back to the room, an astonished look on his face. I put the phone down, but kept the call going so my mom could hear what was going on. He explained that as soon as he asked the front desk manager about calling the police, she informed him that the cops had indeed stopped at the hotel concerning the very same room. I reckoned that my concern led her to call the police herself. They went to the room and knocked on the door, announcing themselves and requesting to be let in. They immediately caught and arrested her along with her partner. They also took the children somewhere safe and out of harm's way. How all of this happened without us hearing a peep, I will never know. All I knew in that moment was sweet relief knowing that the children were safe.